center field, deep to the wall. There it is. Nice call, Hud. There's the pinch hit home run for Whit Merrifield. And it's 3-2 Royals in the eighth inning.
Good news for the Royals, right? Well, it wasn't until the bottom of the eighth inning as the White Sox scored four of their own in the bottom of the inning to take a 6-3 lead. They go on to win 6-4 over the Royals on Thursday afternoon. Welcome to the Sports Ticket here on Kitty Country 94, 9:22 our time on this Friday, August 3rd. Again, the Royals looking for a sweep of the White Sox, but it was a good night for Reynaldo Lopez. I should say afternoon for Reynaldo Lopez, the pitcher for the White Sox. Allowed just five hits, two earned runs, struck out four in seven innings, and got a no decision because of the three-run home run that Whit Merrifield hit, and that came off of the reliever Xavier Cedeno of the White Sox. They gave him a 3-2 lead, as we just heard. Brad Keller had a good game for the Royals on the mound, 6 1/3, five hits, two runs, strikes out nine, 104 pitches, and also gets a no decision. Even after the three-run home run, Tim Hill would come in up to that point. Would have been a loss or a no decision was the only thing that was going to happen there for Keller in the game, and he got the no decisions. Tim Hill came in and finished off the seventh inning, and then in the eighth inning, things imploded on the Royals' bullpen. Jason Adam came in, gave up the home run, a solo shot to Jose Abreu in the bottom of the eighth that tied the game at three, and then he let two on. Jason Hamill gives up a three-run home run to Pauca of the White Sox, and that was all she wrote. They led 6-3 after Daniel Pauca hit the home run, and then the Royals would try to fight back in the ninth. They got a run on a sac fly from Rosel Herrera that scored Brett Phillips, but other than that, they weren't able to muster anything else up. So, again, they lose by a final of 6-4 in the final game of the three-game set. Ned Yost on Keller and the White Sox pitcher Lopez on Thursday afternoon.
He threw the ball really, really well. Just threw the ball extremely well. Gave up one run. Of course, we let one of his inherited runs in. But I just thought he did a phenomenal job keeping us in the game. Lopez, he was a handful for us today. I mean, he was tough. Good changeup, good fastball, spotless pitch as well. And we just, we couldn't do much off him. And Brad did a great job of just keeping it right there in check.
Again, that was Ned Yost, Royals manager, on Brad Keller and Reynaldo Lopez. So the Royals again now with the loss, they're 34-74, and the White Sox improved to 38-70. Updated look at the standings for the AL Central puts the Royals back to four games behind the White Sox if they're trying to get into fourth place in the AL Central. The Indians still in first at 59-48, 10 games ahead of the Twins, who are 49-58 in second place. The Royals swept them out of the break, and that's who the Royals will be playing next. First pitch tonight is at 7:10 at Target Field. So the pitching matchup has Heath Philmeyer, 0-1 of the 3.29 ERA, against former Royal or Royals prospect Jake Odorizzi, who's 4-7 with a 4.58 ERA. First pitch against 7:10 tonight from Target Field in Minnesota. Minnesota looks a little different after some trades that happened. The Red Sox, by the way, pick up a win last night in big fashion over the Yankees, 15-7. So those head-to-head games important in the American League East, and the Red Sox have opened up a 6.5-game lead in the AL East. They have the best record in baseball at 76-34. The Yankees have the third-best record in baseball, 68-39. They're in second place of the AL East. And then kind of looking, there's just a half a game separating the second wild card right now. The Yankees would be the first wild card, and the second would be the A's or Mariners, and the A's have a three-game winning streak. The Mariners have lost three in a row. The A's actually have a half-game lead now over the Mariners for the second wild card. Astros are in first place, the AL West, 69-41, five games ahead of Oakland there in the AL West. So the Washington Nationals continue to win. They've won three in a row now. Still five games behind the Phillies for first place in the NL East. The Braves are half a game behind as the Phillies take over first place with two straight wins. The Braves actually won four in a row, so they're kind of right there on each other's heels there for the first place spot in the NL East. NL Central, the Cubs have a one-game lead now on the Brewers. Both teams have lost recently. The Cubs lost their last game. The Brewers lost the last two. Cardinals are 6.5 out, as well as the Pirates there in the NL Central. And the Dodgers reclaim the lead in the NL West. Two straight wins now for L.A. as they're a game ahead of the Diamondbacks. Rockies are two games behind the Dodgers, one behind the Diamondbacks, and the Giants are five behind the Dodgers in fourth place in the NL West. So, again, a lot to decide still in the National League with that wild card race, especially the Brewers have a one-and-a-half game lead over the Braves. Diamondbacks, the half game behind Rockies, a game and a half. You go all the way down to the Giants, who are four-and-a-half games back. So you have the three division leaders and another eight teams that are fighting for wild card spots. So there's 11 viable options that could make it to the playoffs here in the National League still. It's not that way in the American League, as we were talking about the other day. Just the Mariners a half a game behind, and then after that, closest to the Rays, who are 7.5 behind. They've won three in a row, though. They're trying to fight back into this thing, but the other teams ahead of them are winning, so that's not helping either, other than the Mariners, who have lost three in a row. But, again, not quite as much to decide, it doesn't look like, when it comes down to the end in the American League, as we talked about the other day. So that's a little update on what's going on in Major League Baseball. Again, the Royals starting a three-game set with the Twins tonight at 7:10. All right, NFL preseason opened up last night as the Baltimore Ravens won 17-16 over the Chicago Bears. Most people already know that the Bears' new head coach, former Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy, as he actually has a Chiefs influence at quarterback for his squad. Chase Daniel, who's bounced around at for a moment in the time for the Chiefs. He was the backup to Alex Smith and then eventually went and played for the Eagles and then now the Bears. He actually started the preseason game last night for Chicago through a touchdown pass early in the game that gave the Bears an early 7-0 lead. And then Tyler Bray, former Chief, came in, actually finished with a decent line in the preseason game. But he did have a touchdown pass late, over 2 minutes remaining in the game. Got it within 17-16, but he was incomplete on a two-point attempt. So in the end, they lost 17-16. Lamar Jackson, the rookie quarterback out of Louisville, Heisman Trophy winner not this past year, but the year before that, went 4-for-10, 33 yards, threw a touchdown, had a pick as well. He also ran for 25 yards in the game, so kind of keep an eye on some of the rookie quarterbacks to see what they're going to be able to do. Tyler Bray finished 18 of 34 with 181 yards and a score, and Daniel was 8 of 16 for 53, a touchdown and two picks last night for the Bears. Again, the Ravens won at 17-16. The Hall of Fame game, the first game in the NFL preseason last night. So I'm one of those guys that doesn't really get all that excited about preseason football. I mean, I barely get real excited about preseason football when the Chiefs are playing. But when the Chiefs are playing, I definitely want to watch just to see where they're at as a fan. And then obviously we're an affiliate over on 96.3, the Chiefs Radio Network. And so we kind of pay attention to what they're doing over there, and that's why we talk a lot about them here on the Sports Ticket and during our sportscast as well, and kind of preview training camp and how all that's going. And again, but NFL preseason officially started last night with the Ravens and Bears. I didn't actually get to see any of it. I was out, but I know a lot of people were excited that football was back on the TV. So, again, that was the NFL preseason opener, the Ravens winning 17-16 over the Bears. And shifting to the Chiefs now, we talked on Thursday about how there's kind of a freak out nationally and some what I would honestly call misinformation on headlines that say Patrick Mahomes called the wrong play. He's beset by interceptions. And like I said yesterday, he didn't really call the wrong play. He made the wrong read. I think Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy are doing a lot of the plays that they want him to run. But in the live period, I'm sure they let Mahomes make some of the play calls. But again, it wasn't the wrong call. It was the wrong read. He should have run in a touchdown at the goal line instead of trying to throw one in. It got intercepted in the end zone on one that he forced that he could have just run in for the score. So, again, we heard from Patrick Mahomes yesterday about maybe some of the things that he could learn in that aspect. But Andy Reid didn't talk on Wednesday to the media, but he did talk on Thursday. And obviously all the questions seem to center around Mahomes and how he's doing in his development as a starting quarterback, which rightfully so, as we talked much about yesterday. The Chiefs need to know that he's going to be ready to go out there. And this is a point in time where he's had a lot of interceptions during the training camp and practice sessions, which is something that you're going to see. He's trying to learn a lot. And Andy Reid The head coach of the Chiefs kind of spoke a little bit about that on Thursday with media availability after practice there in St. Joe.
No, he's been doing a great job. You know, I know people wrote about the interceptions. I told you at the beginning of camp, I don't care about all that stuff. I want him to test the offense. It's so important. It's so important. We give him a ton of plays. I want him testing it. If you don't have the intestinal fortitude to go test it, you're going to be one of these quarterbacks that checks it down every time. And that's not what it's all about. So the great thing about Pat is he never makes the same mistake twice. It doesn't happen. He sees everything. He knows it. When he does make a mistake, he comes back and he can talk to you about it. And so he's done nothing but get better and better as we go, and he's got a load on him here.
I think a lot of people think that Andy Reid, when he said you'll become a quarterback that checks down all the time, was trying to take some kind of shot at Andy Reid. When he said the part, if you don't have the intestinal fortitude to go test it, you're going to be one of those quarterbacks that checks it down every time. Reid mentioning checking down, and he then said at one point that Pat owes Alex Smith a lot for what he taught him. Pat owes Alex a mansion. That was a quote in Peter King's debut column for NBC Sports. So he's just simply reiterating what he said at the beginning of camp. He probably should have used a different choice of words, but a lot of people think that he went out and just said that he's taking a shot at Alex Smith. Doug Farrar from NFL, he's an analyst and writer for Bleacher Report, formerly an SI in Yahoo Sports, but he said this really isn't a shot at Alex Smith, since Smith was the most prolific and efficient deep ball passer in the league last year. Reed's always preferred vertical additions to his West Coast offense base, so Alex Reid was one of those guys that had a grasp of the offense. That's what I think is the key, to kind of listen to those words and say, if you don't have the intestinal fortitude to test it and do these things, then you're going to become one of those guys. I think Alex Smith had enough intestinal fortitude that he knew what the offense was, and he was very well versed in what the offense was about. That wasn't a shot at Alex Smith. It was what Andy Reid's been saying the whole time. You got to test it out, or you'll be a quarterback that's not going to have a lot of success, is basically what he's saying. And you cannot say that as far as the numbers that Alex Smith had last year. Now, you can say some things about playoffs and advancing deeper into the playoffs, making it to past the divisional round for once, maybe, and making it to the championship, possibly making it to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl. That's what you want. That's where you want it to go from there. But, again, that wasn't, I think people like to read a little bit too much into some of the words that are said, and I don't have any reason to believe that Andy Reid would be taking shots at Alex Smith. Just like I said, like the article says here, you could have used a better choice of words to avoid anything like that, but I mean, you're just kind of talking in the middle, you're kind of saying what you feel, and it's pretty obvious. If you don't know the offense and can't get the ball down the field, you will become a quarterback that will check down too much. And that's basically the best part of your game in the end. And, you know, I think some people would argue that maybe Alex Smith was that kind of quarterback. But last year he definitely showed the ability to stretch the field a little bit and throw it deeper. He had the best season number-wise as far as that was concerned. In that realm of actually being a vertical passer and having that vertical passing game and not just checking down all the time. So, again, it wasn't a shot that Andy was taking at Alex Smith. He's just talking about Patrick Mahomes and making the improvements that he needs. As he said, he doesn't care about the interceptions. This is a time, training camp, spring training, whatever you're talking about, practices and preseason leading up to the NBA season, fall camps just getting started for a lot of these college football teams. It just started yesterday for K-State. This is the time, and KU, and this is the time that you're working on improving. You're going to make mistakes right now. And, you know, Bill Snyder's a guy that says you got to get better every day, day in and day out, be better the next day. And that's kind of what we're talking about right now. You're not going to freak out about Patrick Mahomes throwing a couple picks and doing the wrong things, especially when he can come out and say, quickly understand right away that he realized he should have just, like the play we're talking about yesterday, just run it in. Don't try to throw the pass there. Don't try to make anything become there when it's not there. Just run it in and don't practice bad habits is what the coaches told him yesterday. So I don't have any doubt that in a situation like that during a regular game, goal line with the legs that Mahomes has, he's probably just going to run it in. He knows that's what he wants to do. He knew he couldn't get hit, didn't want a cheap touchdown, didn't want the defense saying, oh, we couldn't hit you, so that's why he scored. And so he kind of made a decision that was the wrong read and wrong decision. on that particular pass play. But again, he's shown the ability, and yesterday showed the ability to hit open receivers. There was one play that I was watching some video of, and somehow he throws a little curl right in between two defenders, just threads the needle, and hit Mac, one of the backup tight ends, and found him for a nice little gain and a great pass. I mean, he fired right through two defenders, and both the defenders were wondering how in the heck the ball got there. Like, how did he do that? Shouldn't be possible. I'm watching it saying it shouldn't be possible. So, again, he's got all kinds of upside, and there's going to be some downside as a guy that's not as experienced in the NFL. Really doesn't have any real experience as a starter yet, and we'll see that. You know, a lot of people count the Denver game last year, but as we've always said, you know, it didn't mean a whole lot as far as where they were at. Didn't mean anything to the Chiefs. They're already set in stone, the division champs, and knew where they were going to be playing and who they were going to be playing in the first round. No, they didn't know who they were going to be playing, but nothing affected their seeding. They knew they were going to be the four and hosting a game there. So that's why they went with Mahomes, because they knew nothing was going on. Broncos were out of the playoff race already, didn't have a whole lot to play for. You still like what Mahomes did in that game. I'm not going to distract from that, but now you see if he can come in this year and make the improvements and become that everyday guy that the Chiefs are hoping and wanting him to be. So, again, Andy Reid saying that he's coming along pretty good, doesn't worry too much about the interceptions that he had on Wednesday. Now, as far as Thursday's practice was concerned, two players really stood out. B.J. Kissel does a great job there on Chiefs.com of updating everything as a reporter there for the Chiefs, and kind of gives observations, and this is easy for me, too, to kind of look at and find somewhere to go to with how everything's going at camp. He says two players had fantastic days yesterday, and those included Steve Nelson, who the corner was near the ball all day, had multiple interceptions during different periods of practice on Thursday, and he said, quote, "I'm just setting the tone for the season for myself and the defense. I'm just believing in myself and trusting my offseason training to go out there with the mindset to make plays." So Steve Nelson having a good preseason and training camp, I should say, on the offensive side of the ball. Talked about the one that Mahomes threaded the needle and got through two defenders. DeMarcus Robinson had an outstanding catch yesterday. He kind of broke free of the pack, and as he watched the video, it's just amazing. He just breaks free here and kind of jukes out the defender, which was Kendall Fuller, if I remember right. This video that we were watching, he made Kendall Fuller kind of look like a fool. There's some great catches here. It's more than just what we're going to talk about. He made a lot of nice moves with his legs, ran really good routes, and just did a good job all over the place. He had a nice one against Steve Nelson, who we were just talking about. He had a very good catch against him where he kind of laid out on the sideline and ended up scoring a touchdown, hitting the pylon, and doing some good things there. But, man, he broke free on this one and just, yeah, actually he got by Nelson on that one too. So they're saying Nelson was around the ball and had a good day, but two of the best catches that DeMarcus Robinson had yesterday were with Steve Nelson guarding him in coverage. And just over the middle, he burned both defenders, got by Nelson, and it was a little overthrow, just a hair, by Mahomes, and Robinson just reaches out there with a big paw, one-handed grab, and just hauls it in and goes the other way with it, or goes the rest of the way, I should say, with it. So he's making some strides. Many people saying that was the best play they've seen so far here in training camp for the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, much like we've seen over the first week of camp, good plays, learning experiences, a lot of work in goal-to-go situations is what they're talking about, and they did a lot of that on Thursday as well. In those live periods, and Mahomes guessed he threw around 100 passes at practice on Thursday, which said he's about normal for him so far. So Mahomes, another good day, another up and down day, we should say, yesterday. Some other top plays, second-year receiver Jehu Chesson had a couple touchdowns during the goal-to-go period early in practice. The defense had two corners and two safeties, while the offense had three receivers out running routes. DeMarcus Robinson, as we said, had that fantastic catch by the pylon. And Garrett Dieter, Chris Conley, Daniel Braverman all made nice catches on the day as well. So there's a lot of guys that are fighting here for spots. Daniel Sorensen had a pick during a team period late in practice. As we mentioned, they did a lot of goal-to-go work yesterday. And the injury update on Thursday is after missing the last 2 days' foot strain, Yukemi Oligwe was back on the field for the defense. Two offensive linemen, Eric Fisher and Cam Irving, both left early with injuries. Fisher with a tweaked shoulder, Cam tweaked a knee. Said Andy Reid, and then Derek Nottie, Dylan Gordon, Marcus Kemp, Reggie Ragland, Keith Reeser, Sharkhandrick West also didn't practice on Thursday. So that's a little update on the injury report. But you can always go to Twitter. BJ Kissel's at Chiefs Reporter is his Twitter handle, and he's always putting a lot of good videos on there that you can see from training camp. Danny Welniak, who we've had on our show before, follow her on Twitter. She had some good video yesterday of what's going on at Chiefs training camp. So if you're interested in all that, training camp continuing, and the Chiefs' first preseason game, by the way, will be coming up next Thursday, August 9th, as they take on the Houston Texans in the first game of the preseason, and that'll be a 7:30 kickoff from Arrowhead Stadium next Thursday night. Again, the first Chiefs preseason game. So we've covered the Chiefs there, covered Major League Baseball. Just a couple other notes we want to pass along. The Ohio State situation continues to go on, and from ESPN on the eve of Ohio State's first football practice and the future of the coach unclear, school announced Thursday night a special independent six-person group will direct the investigation into Urban Meyer. Again, Urban Meyer put on administrative leave because they're saying that he knew about his assistant coach's domestic violence against his wife and his now ex-wife, but they're saying that Urban Meyer knew about that, didn't report it, and basically tried to cover it up. So again, a group of six people are going to go ahead and investigate this. Ohio State said in a statement the special working group will direct work on the investigative team and be available to provide consultation and advice and assist with communication to the full board on the matter. While Ohio State's brass locks in on Meyer and his future, the Buckeyes football team moving on in the immediate future without him. So, again, we'll keep an eye on what the Buckeyes can do. Ryan Day, again, the acting head coach for Ohio State. So there's an investigative team together. Urban Meyer currently on administrative leave at Ohio State. All right, I'm going to double-check one thing. I always like to make sure that there's nothing that comes down kind of while we're talking about things and shows up that we don't know a whole lot about, and looks like we're good on anything new that really came out here this morning. So we'll finish up with this, and people might remember like Jesse the Body Ventura. He was the governor of Minnesota. Kind of we'll go somewhere with this. He was a professional wrestler. Prior to entering the professional wrestling world, he was a Navy SEAL. Modestly successful wrestling career, but his true superstardom began once he retired from the ring and entered the commentary booth. Fame he gained as the voice of the WWF in the 1980s led to several film and television roles. Jesse got involved in politics in the early 90s because he hated his local city council, ran for mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, and won that election. So he was a mayor first. In Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, in 1998, he shocked the world when he became the governor of Minnesota while running as a third-party candidate. He didn't seek re-election in 2002, but from 1999 to 2002, he was the governor of Minnesota. The reason I bring this up and the reason that I say it's interesting that he first was the mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, a guy named Glenn Jacobs, a 6'8" giant, won an election to determine the next mayor of Knox County in Tennessee on Thursday night. Jacobs, a 51-year-old, had nearly two-thirds of the more than 80,000 total ballots cast, according to Knoxville ABC affiliate WATE. Opposing Democratic nominee Linda Haney is the heavy in the in a heavily Republican Knox County. Again, as the Republican on the ticket. It was a far cry from Jacobs' victory in the Republican primary race, which he won by just 23 votes back in May. But again, he won this one by more than about two-thirds, nearly two-thirds of the ballot. Who's Glenn Jacobs? Why am I talking about him? And this borders on sports, but it's just an interesting story. So that's why I'm talking about it. Glenn Jacobs is the towering 6'8" giant of a professional wrestler, best known as Kane in the WWE. In a professional wrestling career that stretches back to the early 1990s, Kane became one of the longest tenured performers in WWE history. He's a former heavyweight champion, performed inside the ring under his famous red mask as recently as July 15th on a WWE pay-per-view event in Pittsburgh. For more than 20 years, he's been a resident of Tennessee, where in addition to his in-ring career and his wife have a local insurance and real estate company. A variety of WWE icons traveled to Tennessee during Jacobs' campaign to help him with fundraising, including his on-screen brother, The Undertaker, Mark Calloway. They're not actually brothers. They're just brothers in the WWE realm. And Jacobs will officially take over as mayor of Knox County on September 1st. He previously said he will not rule out a special appearance in the ring. So even as governor, he might show up to the WWE. Kane of the WWE, Glenn Jacobs, now the mayor of Knox County in Tennessee. After, well, he's not yet, but he'll be sworn in. He was voted the mayor on Thursday night there in Knox County, Tennessee. So I kind of looked up just to see who are all the people that like have been in professional wrestling that have been involved in politics. And I found this list of five people, or actually six people. One of them's the number six one on here is the great Suzuki. He was a famous masked Japanese professional wrestler. In 2003, was elected to the Iwate Prefectural Assembly, excuse me. And so he was one of them. And also Antonio Inoki, most famous to people for his battle in the United States in 76 against Muhammad Ali. He's the most famous wrestler in Japan. He was an iconic figure in the country in 1989, elected to the Japanese House of Councils. And so we already told you about Jesse the Body Ventura. Then Linda McMahon was involved in the professional wrestling business for over three decades, along with her husband Vince. The couple will forever change the business, grew their company from a regional promotion to an international entertainment powerhouse. As you know, she won the Republican primary but lost to Richard Blumenthal in the 2010 general election for the Connecticut right to be the junior senator in the Senate race there in Connecticut. Both times she got approximately 43% of the vote. She ran again in 2012 as well and lost again there in Connecticut. But Linda McMahon wasn't necessarily a wrestler, but she was involved in wrestling. Donald Trump was also a guy that was involved in wrestling. He's a member of the WWE Hall of Fame. He initially got involved in the world of wrestling when Trump Plaza was host to WrestleMania 4. So people that have been involved in both politics and wrestling. And the number one on this list is something that kind of surprises you that you didn't really know maybe. Before you jump to any conclusions here, as number one on the list is Abraham Lincoln. Honest Abe didn't wear tight spandex tights and deliver devastating body slams. Obviously, we'd probably know about that here in history. However, he did fight in what would eventually morph into wrestling as we know it now. In his late teens and early 20s, he wrestled other men in a style called catch as catch can. His most famous match took place in 1831 against Jack Armstrong. Most accounts have that battle ending in a draw. During this era, most of these fights were legitimate, but sometimes a wrestler would throw a match for money or work with his opponent so they could wrestle each other again in another town without getting hurt. Abraham Lincoln, the most famous match back in 1831, well before he became the president, but he was involved in wrestling. So interesting to see famous politicians that were involved in wrestling again. Kane, a.k.a. Glenn Jacobs, the new mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, on Thursday. Thought that was a good way to end the show, right? Thanks to everybody for tuning in this week to the Sports Ticket. We have more coming your way, obviously, coming up on Monday. I hope everybody enjoys the weekend. And again, we'll talk to you on Monday on Waterside Wake Up. Have a great weekend.